Hello, Bay Ridge. Welcome back to another edition of these special audio after hours where we're kind of stepping through Mark chapter 13, looking at it verse by verse. We'd covered, spent 3 weeks covering it, and perhaps we'll do one more at some point in the future. But I'm taking this time to do this because, again, many folks have looked at Mark chapter 13 and Matthew 24 and Luke 21 and thought that the main reference was to the final return of Jesus in the end of the world, in the dispensational system, which is quite popular in America. It's new in the history of the church, but it's become quite popular in America. This is viewed as dealing with the rapture and the return of Israel to the promised land and all kinds of things about that. As I've tried to show, Mark chapter 13, verses 1 to 31, do not deal with any of those things at all. It is really about the destruction of the temple in 70 AD and the end of the old covenant age. But there's a question, what about verses 32 to 37? And there's a similar passage beginning in Matthew chapter 24, verse 36, and actually running through the end of Matthew 25. What do those deal with? And so I want to take the time in this particular episode to look at Mark 13, 32 to 37 and discuss what I think those verses mean. So notice beginning in verse 32, we read about the day and the hour being unknown, that day and hour. So we read in verse 32, no one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. So there seems to be some kind of a shift here in Mark 13, 32. The same thing in Matthew 24, 36. This is not even recorded in Luke at all. Luke does not have this. He has stopped his recounting of the Olivet Discourse. And there are a few differences noticeable in this verse from what has preceded. Previously, Jesus had spoken of this generation, but now he speaks about that day. So instead of a generation, he speaks about a day. Instead of this generation, it is that day. And previously, Jesus had given signs that the destruction of the temple was imminent, and he expected people to be able to read those signs. But here he says that no one, not even the angels, nor even Jesus himself, surprisingly enough, I'll talk about that in a little bit, knows about that day. And furthermore, no signs are given regarding that day. So this all begs the question as to whether Jesus is still speaking about the destruction of the temple within the current generation, or if he has shifted to a future time that will see his final return. Now, there's two basic ways of looking at this, even if one has understood what I believe is properly verses 1 to 31 as all dealing with the destruction of the temple. The first way is that some believe it still points to the destruction of the temple. And there are several arguments they put forward to make this case. First off, in Mark, no question is raised other than the destruction of the temple. So it seems unlikely Jesus is suddenly shifting to a different topic. The question was, or the statement of Jesus was, that the temple's going to be destroyed. The question was, when's that going to happen? What's going to be the sign that it's about to happen? There's nothing about Jesus' final return or the end of the world. So why would he be speaking about that now? Secondly, they say, although Jesus does refer to this generation and then speaks of that day, that's simply because a generation spans 40 years. So whether I'm speaking of today or 40 years from now, it would still be this generation. But if I'm speaking about this day as opposed to a future day, the future day would be referred to as that day. So it's applicable to use the word that for a future day, even though I'm still talking about the same event. And finally, they say, since the whole chapter has been about the destruction of the temple, if Jesus suddenly wanted to shift to a different topic, they think he would give a clear sign of this, such as, now let me tell you about my final return, the end of the world, the coming judgment, all those kind of things. So for those three reasons, that group of people says, no, he was talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, and these final words are still regarding that. Jesus, nowhere in the Olivet Discourse, actually broaches the topic of his final return and the end of the world. However, there's another group that says, no, though Mark 13, 1 to 31 is about the destruction of the temple and not about the final return of Christ, that this verse, beginning in verse 32, and the following verses in both Mark and Matthew, there's a shift in topic, and it moves the focus to the final return of Christ at the end of the world. Now, why do they say this? There are a number of reasons that they believe this is the case. First, if we remember in Mark 13, 30 and 31, that's also Matthew 24, 34 and 35, and Luke 21, 32 and 33, all of them seem to be a strong ending to the first section of Jesus's discourse. That's where Jesus says that I'm telling you the truth. Everything I've been speaking about will happen in this generation. Heaven and earth might pass away, but my words will not pass away. All of this is going to happen in this generation. And so Jesus has made it clear that everything in Mark, to use Mark as the example, from verse 1 to 31 is happening in this generation. So it would be unusual for him to make that strong statement and then have more words afterwards that were also to happen in this generation. It seems like rather the statement that everything is going to happen in this generation, I'm telling you my words are true, and then continue talking about the same topic. It seems like it brings that subject to a close. Secondly, the shift from this generation to that day seems to signal a clear change of subjects. This generation refers to the near time, while that day looks far into the future. Just as it is properly pointed out that Jesus does not speak about a future generation that's going to see these things. If he had meant that, he would have said that generation. So also here, when he is speaking of that day, he is looking to a point that is further away. Thirdly, there is actually a contextual clue that Jesus is changing subjects. In the Greek, in Mark 13, 32 and Matthew 24, 36, this new section begins with the Greek phrase peri de, which not important for you to learn the Greek phrase, but that usually indicates a shift of topic. Now, these words are not translated in the NIV, the 1984 version in Mark 13, 32, but they are translated in the King James Version, the English Standard Version, the NIV 2011, the American Standard Version, and the NET Bible. All of them indicate that there is this change in subject. And in general, the idea this phrase carries is but concerning. That's what peride means, is but concerning. So Jesus is indicating a change of subject. Basically, he says, everything I have said will happen during this generation, but concerning that day, a different day, no one knows. And so that would seem to be a strong indication that there is, in fact, a change of subject. The fourth reason is, while there are specific signs that are given for the impending destruction of the temple in the end of the Old Covenant era, remember specifically Jesus gave two signs, the worldwide spread of the gospel and the Roman army surrounding Jerusalem, the abomination of desolation, which is the primary sign that they're going to be destroying Jerusalem and the temple, the Old Covenant age is going to be ending. There are no signs given for that day. So there are specific signs given whereby you can know that during this generation, this event that Jesus is speaking about, the destruction of the temple, is about to happen. There are no signs given for that day. This leads to the fifth point, which is the unusually strong statement that no one knows about that day indicates that a different event is in view. Jesus has gone to pains to speak of the certainty of the impending destruction of the temple and the end of the Old Covenant era, a fact which early believers spoke of and they knew was drawing near. For example, in Hebrews 8:13, the writer says that that which is obsolete and aging will soon disappear. The whole point that the writer to Hebrews seems to be making in the letter is, hold on, what Jesus had said was going to happen is about to happen very, very soon. They had a realization that that was about to happen, and there are other places in the epistles. But in contrast with that, Jesus says no one, not even Jesus himself, knows the timing of that day. Only the Father knows that. So this is a strong indication that there's something distinct here, because on the one hand, there's all these signs where people can be aware that the time is drawing near, but Jesus says nobody knows about that day, and there are no signs that are given. And then finally, the last thing that this group would bring forward is in Matthew 24 and 25, the Olivet Discourse continues on for quite a bit after the conclusion in Mark. Luke has already ended it. Mark has this little section. Matthew 24 continues on with more verses, and then there's all these parables in Matthew 25. And one of the key factors that unites the parables in Matthew 24 at the end and 25 is the idea of delay. So for example, in Matthew 24, Jesus is telling a parable about a servant who's supposed to be taking care of the other servants. And in verse 48, we read, "Suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, 'My master is staying away a long time.'" So notice the emphasis here is that the length of delay might cause the servant to act unfaithfully. In Matthew chapter 25, verse 5, we have the parable of the 10 virgins. And part of the point is five of them didn't continue to be ready throughout the time. And so we read in verse 5, "The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep." The parable centers on the fact that there is a long delay. Matthew 25, 19, there's another parable about servants. It says, "After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them." So all of these are centered on the idea of a long delay, not something that's going to happen in this generation. The whole point of verses 1 to 31 in Mark 13 and 1 to 35 or 36 in Matthew 24, the whole point of those passages up through verse 35, it is in Matthew 24, is that this is going to happen soon. It's going to happen in this generation. But then suddenly Matthew shifts, and a central point in all of the parables of Jesus at that point are about the delay and how one should not lose heart in the face of that delay. So that's the two views of what could be happening here. Now, while either of these views are possible, and either of them are certainly orthodox, I think the arguments in favor of seeing a change in subject beginning at Mark 13, 32 and Matthew 24, 36 are stronger. Thus, I think at this point in the discourse, the subject changes to the final return of Christ and to the end of the world. Now, Mark doesn't record the disciples asking that specific question about this, but it's not uncommon for Jesus to move beyond the original question to probe a deeper topic. For example, you know, we saw in Mark chapter 10, when Jesus was asked about divorce, he probes into the topic about what is the purpose of marriage. He does answer the original question, but he gives extra data. And so it's possible that he went further. Furthermore, in Matthew 24, there is an additional question that is not recorded by Mark, and it may be that Mark just recorded that bit of the answer. Mark is almost always shorter than both Matthew and Luke and the events he records. And so it appears that Jesus here is shifting topic and moving on to a further thing. And in a certain sense, the destruction of Jerusalem, Jesus coming in judgment on Jerusalem and the temple, is a picture of what's going to happen at the end of the age. And it appears to me that Jesus shifts to that topic in this final few verses in Mark. Now, one other topic before I move on to Mark 13, 33 to 37 is some may have been shocked when they read verse 32 and say, what does he mean that the Son does not know the date? Notice in verse 32, no one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. We might not be shocked that humans don't know the day, even the angels. That might be mildly surprising, but okay. But what about the Son? Some struggle with this phrase. How could Jesus not know everything if he is divine? Is Jesus indicating here that he's not really, truly, fully divine? Now, this is outside the scope of what we're looking at in these special audio after hours, but I am going to deal with it just real quickly. The answer to this supposed problem is that in his incarnation, Jesus took our humanity to himself and he did not exercise all of his divine prerogatives. While he continued as fully God, as the God-man, he temporarily chose not to use all of his divine power and abilities. This is why Jesus ate, he slept, he could be tempted, he even died, for he was truly human. And as part of this, he did not use the divine ability and right of omniscience. So in the days of his earthly ministry, he only knew the future or had divine insight when it was given to him by the Spirit. Even when we see examples that Jesus seems to know what's going to happen in the future, like he's going to go raise Lazarus, this is not an exercise of his deity, so to speak. It is actually that he is being given this insight by the Holy Spirit as the God-man. He is certainly going to exercise divine power in doing the miracle and raising Lazarus, but he only does this when it is granted by the Father to do so. And in this case, it appears that this was not granted regarding the date of his final return. Obviously, there's not really particularly a reason that Jesus had to know that particular date when he was doing his ministry. So though he did know that the destruction of the temple would happen within a generation, and there's reasons why one could surmise that biblically anyway, he apparently was not granted the knowledge regarding the date of his final return, but it's not really a problem. It's simply part of the incarnation. It's the same reason as to why Jesus ate and slept, how the God-man could die. All of these are references to what happens in the incarnation and what Jesus does. So he did not know the date of his final return in his humanity. In his deity, of course he does, but in his humanity, he's speaking as the Son and he doesn't know that. But then to finally move on to verses 33 to 37, which are really, really applicable for us, there is a warning that Jesus gives. And that warning is to keep watch. We are to keep watch for Christ's final return. So notice in verses 33 to 37, we read, "Be on guard, be alert. You do not know when that time will come. It's like a man going away. He leaves his house and puts his servants in charge, each with his assigned task, and tells the one at the door to keep watch. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether in the evening or at midnight, or when the rooster crows, or at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch." So notice Jesus here says, because no one knows the date of Christ's final return, what he had said in verse 32, he gives a warning that is applicable to everyone. So this is very applicable to us. Even though there are parts of Mark 13 that were really applicable to that generation, just like there were parts about the exile, for example, in Jeremiah the prophet or in Isaiah, that are only secondarily applicable to us. That's true in Mark 13, but this is directly applicable to us because Jesus says, "I'm saying this to everyone." There is no circumscribing thing. This is to everyone alive at that time, to everyone through all ages. And the command is to watch. This is because there are no signs that believers can see to know the final return of Christ and the end of the world is near. And so the call is to be ever vigilant, to be on guard, to be alert, to keep watch. And at the end again, to watch, he gives this command. So notice there are two key ideas in this final short exhortation. Number one, we are to be ever vigilant. This is indicated in the phrases there in verse 33, to be on guard, to be alert, that later on he says to keep watch. Down in verse 34, he says that that's what the servant at the door was doing. Then verse 35, Jesus says, here's the implication, you keep watch. And then he concludes again in verse 37, watch. He also even indicated, don't be asleep in verse 36. All of this is the idea to be ever vigilant. Now, that leads to the second key idea, which is that it is necessary because you do not know when the end is near. That there's a key point here. Unlike the coming destruction of the temple, which you can know because of the signs that are happening, you are not going to know that regarding the end of the world and the coming of Christ. This is indicated in the phrases, you do not know when that time will come. And you do not know when the owner of the house will come back. It's also reinforced in the phrase that you do not even know the return, whether it will be in the evening or at midnight or when the rooster crows or at dawn. In other words, it could be at any time and you will have no prior warning or idea. And so all of this is an indication from Jesus that we are not going to know the time, we're not going to have a prior warning or idea, and therefore we're going to have to keep watch. Now again, notice in verse 37, he says this is applicable to all generations of believers. The command to the disciples to watch is the same command for everyone. What I'm telling you, I'm telling everyone, watch. Now, this is not a command to watch for signs. That's not what he says, because no signs are given regarding this final return. That's one of the big differences starting in verse 32. There are no signs. Rather, it is a sign to be vigilant, to be awake and faithful to Christ, no matter how long until his return. And that this is the point here in Mark 13, I would say, is confirmed in the parables in Matthew 24, 45, and following, all of which are about watching, all of which are about being vigilant, all of which are about keeping our eyes open and not falling asleep, not running out of oil, not starting to act wickedly because the delay is long. There's no sign, then suddenly the owner comes back, suddenly the bridegroom comes, and there was no warning, and once it happens, it's too late. So all of that is there. So brothers and sisters, what this means for us is we are called to use every breath we are given to serve God's purposes in our day, ever mindful of the certain return of Jesus. It has been a long delay. It's been 2,000 years, and it may be another 2,000 years more. But we are to be ever vigilant. And I want to remind us, this requires no setting of dates. It doesn't require constant poring over supposed signs that are happening. There's a red heifer being bred in Israel, or there's a war going on here. None of that is applicable to this. What it requires of us is not seeking after signs, but rather a heart that is aflame with love for Jesus and a desire to bless those around us and keep pointing them to Jesus. And that is applicable no matter when you live, no matter where you live. That is the call that God gives to the church. So with that, we conclude our look through Mark chapter 13 in these special after hours audio sessions. I will come back with one more brief session just to give a few resources so that if you want to dig in and study further, you can do so and take a look at those. And I think you'll find them very helpful. So we'll have that one more short session. And until then, I hope you have a great week. God bless.